ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
A couple of years ago, if you asked someone how to get to the UWM campus, they'd steer you to the east side of Milwaukee, where just a few blocks from Lake Michigan, the university has grown into one of the top research universities in the country. But today, directions to UWM will also lead you west to Waukesha and Washington counties. That's where UWM's two-year campuses are located, offering another dimension to learning to people in southeastern Wisconsin. On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to take a closer look at UWM Waukesha and UWM Washington County. Our guest is Simon Bronner, who oversees the two latest additions to the UWM family. Simon has been with us since the beginning of this academic year. He comes to UWM from Penn State, where he was a distinguished professor of American Studies and one of the country's leading experts in the study of folklore. Welcome, Simon. It's good to have you on today's program.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Simon, we're going to talk more about the fascinating work you've been doing in the academic sphere around folklore, which is, I think, such an interesting topic. But first, we have to begin by acknowledging that the coronavirus pandemic has had a huge impact on your two campuses, Waukesha and Washington County, along with the main UWM campus and, I dare say, every other college and university in the country. Let's start there on the news front. How has COVID-19 impacted UWM Waukesha and UWM Washington County?
Well, at least there's good news to report that so far I have not heard of any of our students, staff, or faculty who have contracted the virus. Nonetheless, we're very involved with the community and want to be a partner with the community because a lot of our students and faculty work in the local counties, and we are in close touch with public health officials, as well as the business community, to make sure that we're acting to do as much as we can to curb this tide of the virus. We were well set up for online instruction, although we pride ourselves on being an intimate community and having small classes and giving students a lot of individual attention. But we're trying to continue that through the virtual environment and having a regular contact through social media as well as through Canvas and our online instruction.
Yeah, it must be strange knowing that that the two campuses, which are beautiful campuses, if folks haven't ever been by them, I encourage you on one of your self-distancing drives to take the opportunity to go ahead and look at them. Must be strange, though, to see the campuses really empty.
It is, because I think part of the attraction of the campuses is that they are a home away from home. They're places to gather, talk, meet people. And as I said, we really pride ourselves on that close interaction between students, faculty, and staff. And we're still trying to simulate that through our technological devices. But it's not quite the same as being there in person and being in the commons area and in the solutions center and those kinds of places where students gather.
Yeah. What about summer school? Have you also made the decision that you won't be returning to a physical presence on that campus just yet?
We have, at least in terms of the course delivery. We have managed to convert all our courses to online for the summer. After that, we're going to wait and see as to whether the buildings will be open for advising and recruitment. We're still waiting to see what will happen after the governor's safer at home order expires, which I now understand is May 26th. because we still want to be able to open up for the kinds of questions and contact that people want. But in the interim, we're continuing to be doing advising. We're continuing to do tutoring through our technological devices.
Yeah, well, we wish you the very best as we all struggle through this, what we hope will be a once-in-a-lifetime experience that has turned our lives upside down. For folks who aren't familiar with what kind of instruction takes place at the UWM Waukesha, UWM Washington County campuses, let's frame what a two-year campus can do. And I keep referencing 2 years because you typically have students who come in for that freshman, sophomore year, and then either finish up and say I've got what I need, or transition to more higher education.
That's right. They can get their general education through the first 2 years. Many of them do then transfer to UWM for one of the many degree programs that are there. And while, in fact, in those 2 years, they can also create emphases, and there are 30 areas of studies that they can emphasize in their time to prepare, whether that's in health sciences, psychology, communications, and so forth. There are three major divisions in natural sciences and mathematics, arts and humanities, and also in social sciences and business. Especially the kinds of students that we often see that are attracted to the two-year campus are those who might be unsure or undeclared about what they want to study. And the kind of setup that we have, again, with the many offerings, allows students to explore and find their career path. And they have close advising all the way to get them on their road to where they want to go and give them the options that they want. Some stop at the associate degree and they go on to successful careers from there, and they also get the kinds of training that they need at that time. And many will be looking for other options, particularly at UWM, with whom we've again arranged since that we've had the restructure. We've talked to many of the colleges, and we have cooperative programs. In that way, we also have added a robust collaborative program that is online as well, of which we are one of the partners, and we have a continuing ed operation for the community in addition.
Is there a typical student? What's the profile of a student who chooses to start their college degree on a two-year campus versus going to a more traditional program like you would find at UWM's main Eastside campus?
The student at a two-year campus can be part-time, full-time. The person can be of traditional college age, and it also could be an adult learner as well. But if there is a profile, I would say it's those students who want to stay at home, want to stay close by. Perhaps they're working while they're thinking about what their career paths are going to be, and they are a bit unsure. They may have an idea they want to go into the sciences or health career, or perhaps into engineering, but they're not exactly sure, or they want to combine different interests. And the two-year campus is a great place to do that. And also now with online instruction, possibilities of continuing even after they receive the associate degree if they do not want to move to another campus.
Let's give our listeners some sense of size or scale. How big is UWM Waukesha? How big is UWM Washington County in terms of faculty, staff, and most importantly, how many students on each campus?
Sure. Right now, the Waukesha campus is the largest of the two-year campuses in the UW system. It has over 1,500 students that are there, so there's a critical mass there. Washington County is a bit smaller, but still one of the larger campuses as far as the number of students goes. It has over 600 students that are there, and We have a robust faculty and staff who provide support and instruction for them there.
Yeah, yeah, and your faculty come from all over. I've met several of them, and the credentials are impressive.
We try to say that you can go far, close to home, at the campuses, and you can get a high quality education for very affordable tuition. And as part of that high quality, we want to be sure that we have people with terminal degrees who are experienced teachers, who are devoted to teaching and to the success of students.
And what about the connection to the local communities? So Washington County campus is located in West Bend, and the Waukesha campus located not far from the city of Waukesha. Are there a lot of interactions between students and the businesses that perhaps someday will employ them?
There are indeed, and there is career counseling that works with many of the area businesses and sponsors career fairs, as well as internships. We've added a service learning component in not only the business community, but also the nonprofit community as well. And I personally have gone out to many of those to talk about what the possibilities for on-site learning will be. And it can extend from something like Old World Wisconsin, which is one of the world's great outdoor museums, to businesses in healthcare, where people can get real hands-on experience in what it means to manage as well as to help people in their different health concerns.
Yeah, and I think I heard you mention just before we went on the air, Simon, that that the enrollment prospects on your Waukesha campus are looking very bright these days.
They are, and I'm very happy to see that, and we're trying to figure out why that is, and certainly have a welcoming environment for people to consider when they think about their college options. We did have a campaign in which we tried to say that this is high quality education close to home. And I think people are responding right now from the information that I've received from the UW system. The largest increase in all the regional campuses is at the Waukesha campus, and it is the largest of the regional campuses. And we're also seeing a good response at the West Bend or Washington County campus. In addition, we're going to try to keep that up. And also, I think a reason for that is that because of the close attention that we give to students and their families, we ask them, what do you need? How can we support you? How can we indeed help you on your path? And I think people are responding to that kind of inquiry. It's not a moldable prefab kind of education. It's one where we really want to serve the communities. We want to serve the families and the needs of the individual students.
Yeah, and again, a lot of folks who may have remembered those campuses from a few years ago will know that they, at the time, were not part of UWM. In fact, the 13 two-year campuses scattered around the state of Wisconsin that are part of the UW system really were part of a separate system. But then, as a result of a reevaluation of how best to serve the state's needs, those two-year campuses were essentially connected to the closest four-year campus, and that's where the UWM connection comes in.
And I think that's important, not only the brand of UWM, which is recognizable throughout the country when you have a degree that comes from the regional campuses or from the main campus, but also the kinds of integration and resources that we have. We've been working with the multicultural centers at the UWM campus in terms of reaching diverse constituents. We've been working with the different colleges so that there is a pathway. We got invited, one of the clubs, pre-business, and we also have a health sciences division as well that got invited to the UWM campus to participate in their career days. And also people from the campuses have come out to the campuses to talk about careers and to advise students and tell them what the opportunities are. That and students greatly enjoy Panther Fest in addition, which was made available to the regional campuses as well. And the students, I think, really appreciated that.
Yeah, and really a perfect launching pad for people who might not be quite ready for that four-year campus experience. They could take all the credits that they earn in Waukesha, Washington County, and walk right into the door to UWM's main campus and finish up that baccalaureate degree.
That's a good point. And in fact, I just read an article in the Chronicle of Higher Education that was talking about reaching those students. Many of them are first generation students, or they have some transitional issues, or they're not only undeclared, but they're anxious about what that experience will be. And this is a bridge that can serve them well as they get their confidence and they discover what they want to do and what the campus life experience is all about.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us, I would say, in the studio, but it's actually in our home studios, Simon Bronner, who is the dean of the UWM Waukesha and UWM Washington County campuses, the two-year campuses that a couple of years ago became part of the UWM family. I mentioned at the beginning of the program that in addition to his role as an administrative leader for the university, Simon also comes to us with a tremendous background in an area that I find fascinating, the study of folklore. Simon has written or edited more than 40 books in his career. He is viewed as one of the preeminent experts in the study of folklore here in the United States. And so we're going to spend the remainder of today's program talking about folklore. What is it, Simon?
I think the quick answer is those things that have to do with tradition and perhaps heritage as well. When you repeat a ritual, when you participate in a holiday, when you tell a joke that you've heard before, you're participating in folklore. It's not just the image of people playing banjos on some porch somewhere, but it is also everyday life and the proverbs and speech and slang that we have, and that also includes foodways, which such as those that I've discovered since I've come to Wisconsin, such as the fish fries and the fried cheese curds. That's all part of what folklore studies.
It's real life, right?
It is. And those things that people take pride in as tradition, that they say is part of their heritage, whether that's local, ethnic, regional, national, all that fits into why folklore is significant as well as fascinating to study.
Simon, I had an opportunity to take a look at your latest book, which actually just came out this spring. It's called Folklore, the Basics by Simon Bronner. And I was struck by the account of the history of when people first began to realize that folklore weren't just stories, not that that's, you know, I don't want to diminish the importance of our family heritage and the way in which we grew up. But going back to Europe, going back to the 1800s in Germany, that's when academics began to realize that this was something worth paying attention to, right?
Yeah, the Brothers Grimm are household names. Not only because of the stories that they collected and popularized, but also because at the time that they made those collections in the countryside from people who actually told these stories rather than from literature, they also noticed that these stories were similar to others that they had collected in books. And so they were asking question, what's the connection of Cinderella in Germany to Cinderella in China, for example? And by making that inquiry and actually a whole volume that they created of notes and sometimes questions of this kind, they created the modern study of folklore because they were making it global and they were making it analytical. We certainly still enjoy things like Red Riding Hood and Snow White and so forth. But they were also asking, what are the source of these? And what does it mean that great literature, such as telling these stories, comes from the mouths of ordinary people and in their day of the peasants? And what does it also mean politically? Because they were nationalists in the sense that they thought that at the time, responding to the aristocracy, that governments should be based upon the cultures of which they were part, not based upon families or whatever. And one of their bits of evidence to show that was where folklore exists. So that was their German part. They said German folklore should be the basis of a German nation. And then a similar kind of movement occurred in Italy. Then it passed on to France and England. And some of that is also true in the United States as well.
So we not only remember the Grimm brothers' stories, and you know, I remember reading them as a kid, but it got us collectively to begin thinking about our own stories here at home.
Yes, and a part of the revelation, especially for Americans, is that this material does not have to be old in order to be folklore. Part of the idea of the Grimms was that they were preserving and capturing this ancient lineage. But yet in the United States, I think the contribution there was to notice that there are these emerging legends. The hero of George Washington, for example, and the story everyone knows about chopping down the cherry tree, and also place names, for example, and how mountains and streams got their names that we hear about, as well as the Americanisms that we tend to think about. And so this was an invitation to then say, is there an American folklore the way that there is an English folklore or a Japanese folklore and so forth that seems to be much older?
Is American folklore as robust and as rich as the stories that we heard from the ages in Germany and Italy?
Well, many folklorists might bemoan the fact that there's not an ancient mythology, except for the Native Americans, that other countries like the Scandinavians and the Celts and so forth would claim. But nonetheless, I would argue, or part of the fascination for me as an American folklorist, is that it is robust because it's so diverse. That because so many different peoples came to the United States, all with different heritages and narratives and customs, and the process of how some of those came together, some of those stayed apart, what persisted, what fell away, is probably more important in the American landscape than it is in some others.
Can you give us some examples of your favorite American folk stories? One of mine, I have to tell you, is Paul Bunyan and the Blue Ox, right? That was something that every Wisconsin kid remembers hearing told on a cold winter night. Which ones stand out to you?
Well, what I can say about the Paul Bunyan stories is that they're fascinating because they show a great process of oral tradition, then moving into commercialization and then revitalization. And the reason that I say that, besides the idea of Paul Bunyan as this super American kind of figure with strength and pulling up trees and using them as toothpicks, is that it was an occupational folklore of loggers in the North Woods. And then an advertising specialist, I don't know if he had his degree in communications or not, picked up on that to use that as an icon for this lumbering company. And then it caught on after that as a national phenomenon. And then, in fact, was used during World War II as this image to inspirit the land. And so, but what I can say also generally, and something I'm attracted to also, are stories of the frontier, of which Paul Bunyan, Davy Crockett, Daniel Boone, Simon Girty, all those fit into those kinds of models that are very American and raise very interesting questions.
Those are some older stories. Are we still creating folklore today?
We are indeed, and there's a whole field of study of what are called urban legends. They're not so urban. We tend to prefer the terms contemporary legends or belief legends, everything from the vanishing hitchhiker to, of course, cats in the microwave and these kinds of stories that seem to emerge that ask for commentary, and many of them about technology. And I'm seeing some conspiratorial legends that fit into that too, even in this COVID-19 environment.
So do you think that the internet is going to add to a robust growth in folklore stories going forward?
I believe so. And I've in fact written about that, about the virtualization of folklore, because people are going on the internet to ask questions, is this real? And then telling what they've heard from a friend of a friend.
Terrific, terrific. Well, Simon, just a fascinating conversation about your work, the study of folklore in America. And again, I encourage our listeners to, if they get a moment, to just go to Amazon and take a look, or your local bookstore. Doesn't have to be Amazon, especially the local bookstore, and look for Simon Bronner, B-R-O-N-N-E-R, has written and edited just an amazing collection of stories that speak about something that is so dear and so personal to many of us, those stories we heard growing up, which are falling into that category of folk tales or folklore. Who knows, maybe one of your favorite stories will be captured in some of the work that Simon has done. Thanks so much, Simon.
You're quite welcome. Thanks for having me.
Simon Bronner, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. In addition to being an expert in the study of folklore, he's also the dean of the UWM Waukesha and the UWM Washington County campuses, all part of the UW-Milwaukee University. Well, listen, folks, we appreciate you taking time. We hope you're all staying safe during this time of staying at home and self-distancing. Please be healthy, and please come back next week when we continue conversations with some of the fascinating people at UW-Milwaukee. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Ujak.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Ujak, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.